It's all about the macro productions.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tech Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have a prodigio!
Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you're watching us on Rumble, band.video, Vigilante TV, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thank you so much. We certainly do appreciate your support over the years. And if you haven't rated the show already, I hope you'll take 3 seconds and do it. Give us 5 stars if you think we've earned it. Do that with all of the shows that you like. For whatever reason, that is the glitch. The algorithm says if your show gets rated, it gets suggested to more people. So if you don't mind, for those shows out there that you like as well, give them 5 stars and help them get a little algorithm boost. If you want to connect with me, macroaggressions.io is the website for that. Hopefully you have bookmarked Activist Post and Natural Blaze, and you are getting some of your information over there. We appreciate our sponsors. Cannot do the show without them. Thank God for Wise Wolf and Tony Arterburn. They've got the best gold and silver auto buy program out there. It's called Wolfpack Gold. You can get set up with it in like 5 minutes. It's an auto buy program. You set the amount. There's certain different tier levels. And what you're going to do is you're going to get a box delivered to your house once a month. And in that will be the best bang for your buck. I mean, silver, gold, combination of thereof in a little box that Tony and his team have put together. And you just stack that, just collect them every month and slowly and quietly put them away, keep that silver and gold coming in, and trade some of your soon-to-be worthless Federal Reserve notes for some tangible gold and silver. And our guest is going to have lots to say about that as well. So if you're interested, go to macroaggressions.gold, check it out for yourself, sign up for Wolfpack Gold. It is so smart to do. Once you do it, you'll be glad that you did. Also, the Weekly Wolf, they've got an email newsletter over there. So just go to macroaggressions.gold and check it out. Also, to our newest sponsor, we're so grateful to have a storable food provider that gives you a whole lot of options out there. Augustin Farms, they started in 1972. They're a family-owned business. They got the best storable food out there. I'll tell you what, man, they're very specific freeze-dried items. Butter, powder, eggs and dairy, fruits and vegetables, meats and proteins. They've got baking mixes. They even have a recipe book for all of these freeze-dried foods that they sell over there. It's amazing. They have everything that you could possibly need. They have emergency kits, you know, as you would expect. They have camping supplies. They even have warehouse sale items. So there's a lot going on over there. If you're interested, go to augustinfarms.com. AUGASON Farms, AugustinFarms.com. Promo code is macro. The link is down in the show notes and check it out. Well, it's my pleasure to invite back to the show one of the first guests that we had talking about crypto, talking about currency, talking about everything. We got a good one for you today, ladies and gentlemen. Back on the show, John Snyson. Hey, John, good to see you again. How are you?
Fantastic seeing you. How are you, Charlie?
How come I don't see you at an Acapulco anymore?
I've been bogged down. Like, I have a full-time job. So, like, today, actually, I worked 30 hours, and then I came back. Like, I traveled, like, 16 hours on the road and then worked 5 hours at nighttime. So, and then I came back working on my projects, and then I have my The Economic Truth that I play with as well. So, yeah, just keep me way too busy. My goal now is my new project to kind of get myself to that financial freedom that I need to come and hang out more.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that new project too. But speaking of financial freedom, it was funny when you and I hooked up in 2019, you had your book with you at an Acapulco with all the currencies, all of the expired currencies. What a great reminder that fiat is fake. It's the head of the snake. Everything fiat goes to zero eventually. And to see those Zimbabwe notes in there, man, it's fantastic. Are we headed towards Zimbabwe? I mean, you know a thing or two about currencies. You've written books on them. What do you make of the state of the world right now with regard to fiat currencies?
Well, I think we're heading towards most likely not like a Zimbabwe type event. I think you're more heading towards a sudden reset into digital currencies. So I think that's what is more likely, because they're desperate. Their whole system is falling apart. It's full of debt. You know, you go and look at everywhere around the world. It's just peak debt everywhere. Doesn't matter which economy you're in right now. Pretty much everybody's just loaded up on the heroin of the time, which is called the commercial bank lending, which basically when it was actually just as a recent, there's a guy called Richard Werner, which was the guy that leaked the Global Leaders for Tomorrow list, by the way. I don't know if anybody knew that, but he was selected by Klaus to be one of the henchmen for the World Economic Forum, and he actually leaked the list. He was the guy that leaked the first list of the group before it became Young Global Leaders. So they changed the name after Werner leaked the list. A funny little side note. But Werner was just on Tucker and was talking about, banks. There's no fractional reserve banking. And I was aware of this. When you go and borrow money from a bank, they just type it in and it comes from nowhere. That's how it works in the commercial banking system. And so it's just pure magic, basically, that they're performing by then taking your asset that you have pledged to them as a collateral. So it's a fantastic business idea. You know, you have no money. You could basically be a bum on the street, start a bank, and then you'd be very successful quite quickly if you understand the protocol of banking. And so, we're just hitting that peak everywhere. Like you've seen in the U.S. now, like the real estate, the commercial real estate have been in disarray for a long time. And then you have the residential market is now toppling over. Credit card, student loan, doesn't matter where you're at. Like that's just the U.S. But then you have Canada, which has been in an epic housing bubble created by none other than Mark Carney back in the day. Like he was the one that lowered interest rates and managed to create an even more epic real estate bubble. Now he's back as prime minister, of course. And this guy, you know, has been all over the world traveling, and he has been at probably one of the most sinister places in the world. And it's not Bilderberg, actually. It's called Financial Stability Board, and they regulate anything to do with finance, accounting, the stock markets, banking, everything that you could think of that has to do with money. He sits there and gives orders like, let's create bail-in regime. That was Mark Carney, by the way.
It's funny. Yeah. You last time you were on, we talked about the Financial Stability Board, and it's one of those groups that nobody talks about. And I was thinking about you a couple days ago. I was thinking about you because obviously we had this scheduled, but I was writing, I'm working on a new book, and I was writing about the Financial Stability Board. And I was like, this was a John Snyson thing. In my mind, I was thinking like hat tip to you because I didn't realize how devious this group is. Who are they for the audience? Just to refresh everybody's memory on what they are and what they do.
So what they do is they basically, they were funded initially by the Bank of International Settlements. It was $5 million back in, I think it was the mid 1990s. And then it was the Financial Stability Forum at the time. It was Mario Draghi was the head of it at the time. Whereas, Mario Draghi, yeah. And so you had Mario Draghi. And then who took over after Mario Draghi as head of the Financial Stability Forum? Well, when they changed. So in the 2008 crisis, they'd be like, yeah, we need to come in and regulate and control everything. Because there's a book called The Redesign of the Global Financial Architecture, The Return of State Authority by Stuart P. McIntosh. He's the chair of a group called Group 30, which, guess what? Who was also sitting at the top of Group 30 before he became prime minister in Canada was Mark Carney. So this Group 30 is the think tank behind the Financial Stability Forum. It's all the top economists, the chair of all the banks, and the heads, like the brightest minds in brightest economists in the world that sits there and create policy ideas on what who should we regulate, what should we control next. They're basically in the book. I think the word technocrat was mentioned like 50 to 100 times minimum. And we all know what technocrat stands for. And it's the same as you might think, because this is what, I forgot his name now, that wrote the book on technocracy, has been explaining in great detail what they believe. They just believe in micromanaging your whole life, like in a Chinese type social scoring system. And that's what they want. But anyway, so the FSB is basically was created by the Bank of International Settlements with $5 million in seed capital. It was got put front stage after the 2008 crisis because they needed a solution to, having a financial crisis. We can't have that again. So they created, they then pushed the Financial Stability Board on top of the financial mountain. And so basically, they were sitting there. They're even above the Bank of International Settlements because they also regulate the biz. Like the biz sits under here. There's the global accounting body. There's the global stock body. And then there was one more. I forgot. There's but I think there's 10 different. If you go and search up the Economic Truth and go and look at the FSB presentation that I am on Odyssey or on YouTube, you'll find out there is a whole bunch of global organizations, the Global Pension Organization, the Global Deposit Insurance Organization. There are all these global financial entities that are regulating everything and control. And they are the ones that when you hear suddenly a adoption happening with an idea, for example, you got bail-in regime created by Mark Carney and a few others. It's, where they come in, the bank fails, it's got to get some money. So it goes and takes a whole bunch of money that you had deposited, which you borrowed to the bank. You didn't. That was not yours. And then they take it and then they basically, in Cyprus, they did it. They took even from insured depositors, they took, 6.4%. And they took up to, I think it was 50% of some people that were uninsured. That was over the threshold of the local insurance agency in the European Union at the time. And so, but this entity sits there and comes up with all these stupid ideas of regulating everything and controlling everyone because we need more regulation. There's nothing better than regulating and controlling the peasants, because all we could do is very dumb, stupid things, and they're the biggest geniuses in the world. And so that's kind of where they come from. And they sit on top there and regulate every single aspect of your life, that if you touch anything to do with stocks, bonds, anything that has to do with money and finance or cryptocurrency to a great extent now, that's the Financial Stability Board in a quick description for you.
Yeah. And Mark Carney is a economic terrorist. Everywhere.
Oh, yeah, 100%. He's gone several places.
Yeah. Bank of England, right?
Yeah.
What was he known for at the Bank of England? What did he? I don't know the ins and outs of his career, but I'm sure he did.
Oh, let's see now. Let me try to see if I can reiterate this quickly. So he was known when he was at Bank of Canada. Well, he came from Goldman Sachs, by the way, same as Mario Draghi. Yeah. He was at Bank of Canada. He lowered interest rates, created a more epic bubble here in Canada. He destroyed, created so much inflation with low interest rates and created the bubble that we have today, which is the biggest in the world when it comes to asset real estate asset prices. It's starting to finally fall apart. Funny enough, when he came back, it started to fall apart because they pretty much knew. When he came over to Bank of England, let me see if I can do this on the spot. He's blamed for a few things over at Bank of England, but it's funny. He was at Bank of Canada. He became the head of the FSB. He was still the head of the FSB during his chairmanship of the Bank of England, by the way. But he was known in England. Oh, yeah, he created the real estate bubble in England, too. And then he did a few other little sinister things. I don't remember off my head, unfortunately. But he's known for creating asset bubbles and whatever he goes. He has his little dealings. Like he probably made like hundreds of billions in dealings with the Canadian government, both because he was basically an advisor since 2016 for Trudeau government here in Canada, telling them what to do during the Truckercom, why he came out and said we need to freeze bank accounts, and oh, magically they froze bank accounts, and I wonder where that came from. That could have nothing to do with his tenure at the Financial Stability Board, and then telling G20 countries, look, you know what, if you got a little bit of dissenters over there, just freeze their bank accounts. It's easy, it's centralized, we can regulate and control them, so why don't we just freeze their bank accounts and put them. Now they're trying to put them in Tamara Leach and what's his name, King something. They're trying to put those guys in for 7 years for something called mischief. And mischief, that is if your kid was tagging on the window someplace. Like that's a mischief charge. So 7 years for a mischief charge, you know, that. It just shows you like what they're all about. Like Mark Carney is sitting there, and now, of course, he had Chrystia Freeland there as his puppet. At the time, and she was the one invoking all these rules and regulations. So yeah, they just fully in control. But he has created bubbles wherever he's gone. Oh yeah, he created the bail-in regime. He created total loss absorption protocol, like how when a bank fails, like how you just dissolve a bank. He created that protocol. He had a few other, like I remember I was talking to somebody in England, I said, oh yeah, he did this, he did that, but he's basically goes in and then he strip mines the country that it goes into and rips it apart. He creates massive bubbles and then he enriches his bankster friends that, you know, are in control of the Financial Stability Board through the G30 group, which is the Bilderberg of finance, I call it. As you know, you had the chair of each bank. So it's like, why is it the chair of the bank? Why isn't the CEO? Well, the chair is the one in charge of the bank because he sits on the board. Yeah. You could fire a CEO. You could fire Jamie Dimon and Solomon and whoever you want. But the chair is the chair of the board of a corporation and in control pretty much of the main decisions there. And so they sit there, the head of the top central bankers in the world is always there, and then the top economists. And so, yeah, you got that group of individuals, technocrats, being like, yeah, we know better than everybody else, and so we should come in there and regulate everyone. Now, it's been made clear by Richard Werner, by the way, in this interview. First of all, banks create money out of thin air. It doesn't exist whatsoever. So it's pure magic there. And also the central banks, for example, in the United States, the Federal Reserve is the only entity that could run $1 trillion in losses right now and still pay themselves $10 billion annually in costs and salaries to run themselves, even though they're bankrupt, technically a bankrupt entity. But there's nothing wrong with it because they are allowed to then create more currency through banks and so on, and then pay themselves salaries, even though they're bankrupt. It's a fantastic scam.
What a scam. It's like playing Monopoly against all your friends and family, except that you're the banker. And not only are you the banker, but you also have a photocopy machine right next to you. And you can just take all the Monopoly bills and just make copies of them all day long. And you personally can never run out of money. I'm wondering, is Mark Carney installed into Canada to give it the private equity treatment where everything gets expanded and the bankers make a lot of money and then they bankrupt it and strip mine it?
Yeah, that too, and then also to implement the control grid. There's so many bills right now that are coming our way here in Canada. There's the version of the Online Safety Act is coming here in Canada as well. It's even more sinister than the British one. It basically allows them to, at any time, without your consent, go and look at your data, open your computer even remotely, being able to, it's very serious stuff where they could just basically get any information that they want at any time on you from your ISPs, from your service providers like Google and Amazon and so on. And then there is another bill, a UBI bill, trying to make its way through legislation that everybody's going to get universal basic income. That's another one that they need to have in place, that everybody gets dependent on government so they could control the peasants. And then what else do they have? Now, there are so many bills. Oh, yeah, they have another bill where they can also look at your mail at any time, like through it's called Canada Post. It's a Crown Corporation, a government's state-owned entity. But they could basically go in there and check it anytime. When you send something across the border, yes, they could check everything that comes across the border in your packages, no matter what. They can also check and find out, and they want to know everything over $1,000 that you do in transactions they need to know about. It's just like a massive control grid, and they're trying to basically revoke most of the tiny little amounts of rights that Canadians have left, because there's not much. We found that out during the trucker protest. And so it's just basically strip mining Canada, you know, taking control of all the resources, the assets. Like, there's a lot. They go in now. And another thing that they just passed is that the government could at any time take your property if they deem it national security to build a project on or do any kind of activity. They could just take your property right out of your hands without your legal. You can't fight it, basically. So that's another fun thing that they just passed. That actually passed already. There's so many things that are being taken away here in Canada now. There are big talks about the creating of scoring systems now. I knew that this was coming if Mark Carney got in, which was pretty certain after they kind of... It's funny in Canada, the state of media... is not just the one that does the propaganda, the CBC, but it's everybody that are mainstream media here. Everybody gets mass amounts of money from the Canadian government. So they just basically sit there like parrots, you know, giving out the whatever propaganda is, the taste of the propaganda is today. And so it's very interesting to watch all of them just parroting the same ideas, never questioning anything. Never, like, for example, questioning that the Pierre Poilievre is a conservative candidate here, talking about cutting government and doing a whole bunch of things. He probably is also controlled, because I know that through having been involved with elections on a local level, that even the elections bodies are sabotaged and could try to stop you from getting in. But with Pierre, like, he's running, wherever he's running, there seems to be like 150 to 200 candidates running against him. And no other candidates have that except for the leader of the Progressive Conservatives. His wife is from Venezuela. He's talked about the crisis that Venezuela created with their hyperinflation there. Socialist policies that, you know, took the country from being one of the richest in the world to some of the poorest in the world. And so he's been talking about that. And then suddenly you get... And they talk about it in the media like it's the most normal thing to have 200 people running against one guy that are all independent candidates. It's called the longest ballot. They call the longest ballot committee, and they're protesting the ballot rule, like the rules of like how you can, run in Canadian politics. But apparently it has nothing to do with that they're trying to sabotage him at all.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So just
Canada's
wild
got
stuff.
Problems.
Yeah.
You guys have had, we all have problems, but Canada has led the way in a lot of this authoritarian overreach. But I'll tell you what, perfect time for you to to roll out your project. Now, I've had the benefit of talking to you over the years, and I know that you're working on this. You've sent some prototypes my way, but I think that people need to know about what you've got, because you might have solved this problem of communication, of the overreach, the centralization of power into the hands of not just the government, but the private side of things, the Amazons of the world. So let's talk about OuterNet.
Yeah, let's do it.
And what this is and why it exists. Well, we know why it exists, but let's talk about what it is. I think people will figure out why it exists once you tell them what it is, but go for it.
Yeah, so with OuterNet, like, let me just give you a story of what I've been looking for. You know, I think people kind of understand what I stand for. I'm an anarcho-capitalist. I want no government involvement in my life. I want to be a fully free human being because there's like the only natural right as a human being is that you should be free. That's my view on things. And so doing that, you know, I've been involved in lots of different projects. I've been involved with World Alternative Media with Josh Sigurdsson back in the day. We did lots of fun stuff. And I've been involved with several other podcasters. Had so much fun. Done a lot of cool stuff. And I got to meet you, you know, in Acapulco, and had lots of fun there and chatting and hanging out. So just met so many amazing people and just fantastic. Had so many fantastic. I've been so blessed. I've been involved with, you know, guys like Teardrick Griffin, working with him very closely, and so I've been very blessed. Like in my, I'm still 40, so I hope I got a lot more in me. But I have always like wanted to not just, you know, talk about things. We got to find solution for things, and that's been kind of a driver that I tried to find. And one day, I use LinkedIn a lot, by the way. Like, this is interesting. Like, a lot of people's like, well, LinkedIn, why do we use that? That's useless. Well, I met so many cool people. I interviewed, like, one of the top journalists at the time on derivatives. She was right there, like, digging into what was going on in the 2008 crisis. She knew everything about every single aspect and the tiny little minute details of it, to like former fund managers that created the movies about how the monetary system is corrupt. Like, they had, you know, worked at Fidelity, and then he got fed up because he saw the problems with the monetary system and the banksters. And so he created his own thing, David Morgan, and a whole bunch of other great people that I met over time, including you, Charlie. But what I always had the drive to try to find was some kind of solution. Like, I need something, because, like, especially now, like, look at where we're at. Like, look at the facial recognition scanning happening in Australia and in the UK right now. It's coming to Canada right away, where you supposedly are needing to make sure that you're 18 or right, whatever it is to access 15 or something to access certain sites. Well, this scan your face, for crying out loud. So good. Yeah. And so with that, I always tried to look for things, but this is very random how I got involved in the project. I was just commenting on LinkedIn on something. And then a guy called James Cunnington from Britain, from Liverpool, former hacker. He's taken down an insurance company in England as top CEO, actually a billionaire from the US that he took down, after they basically didn't want to pay the insurance when his parents' house burnt down. So he had quite the vengeance against...
this hacker guy's parents' house burned down, and the insurance company wouldn't pay on it. So he went after the CEO?
Yeah, he hacked into their database and found the stuff on. And then, there was a lot of dirt. So he had to quit, and he was gone. He's been gone for 8 years from the earth almost. And then suddenly he popped up again, the same guy. And guess he's actually, it was funny. I got to tell a quick side story. He just popped up, the same CEO. And then my friend's like, okay, I got to come after him again because I hate this guy's guts. He destroyed my family's life. And he's like, guess where he's at? Oh, he's at Canada Life Insurance in the UK, running there. He's the CEO of that insurance company. And guess where the Canada Life has their headquarters? It's in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, where I live. Nice. Yeah, so he's like, can we, like, what can we do to, like, find some dirt, like, just torment this guy, because he just new company. He made that, like, he was homeless for a period of time, my friend James as well. So just a terrible hardship. But anyways, he was always kind of, he's a libertarian. He loves his freedom. And then he knows, you know, other hackers and other fantastic people out there. And so he commented on a post, I commented about libertarianism or whatever. This is when people say, like, oh, why would you care about talking to other people? Well, I talked there, and then I found James randomly. He contacted me. He's like, oh, I want to chat with you. You know, he owned at the time a company that does it helps rich people find private vaulting for gold, silver, fine art, and everything around in England.
Like a vault?
No, he helps people find. So there's a website that he has.
Didn't you work at a vault?
Yeah, I did, actually. I worked inside of the Royal Canadian Mint's silver holding vault. Yeah, so I've been in the belly of the beast. And actually, the land was owned by the Queen. It's still owned by the Queen here in Winnipeg, Manitoba. But yeah, so anyways, so we got to meet online, and then he was like, I got to introduce you to a friend of mine that I think you'd like. And so this friend of his was, I'm not going to mention his name, but he was showing me this program, and it was like they used some kind of BitTorrent technology to have like us connect directly from computer to computer. And I think I showed this to you back in the day. We basically connected on this, and then suddenly there was a direct connection between you and me on our browsers without the ISP could really stop it or whatever. And so that was really cool. But then I kind of like threw ideas around, they threw ideas around. And then, like, how about we create something that would just basically go back to what the internet was supposed to be back in the day when guys like Jeff Berwick was involved in the early internet. You know, it was supposed to be decentralized. It was supposed to be free. There wasn't any, you know, ad, you know, big data, you know, sucking all your information out of you for nothing and then selling it for billions to others. And there was no algorithms, you know, in control of you. There was no central control platforms that you had to be on in order to be able to communicate and so on. And so after a while, we talking forth and back, and we decided to create the Outernet protocol. So the Outernet protocol is basically created. So there's two portions to it. There's something called the cloud itself, which, you know, everybody has a cloud, but it's at a data center somewhere, centralized and controlled by the data provider like AWS, Azure, you know, Apple and their iCloud, for example, and so on. And so what we said, like, how about we just rewrite the rules of cloud computing? How about everybody can participate with anything that they have of computing power and they can control it? Like, nobody is able to control. Everybody can participate, but nobody can come in and control anything within that system. Like, we could decide who you want to connect to, for example, and so on. You don't have to. Even Amazon could come in, connect their data power to our network, but they wouldn't be allowed to touch the data. Like, they are completely in ownership of now. It would just be decentralized data that passes through with cryptology on it. And so they wouldn't be able to do what they're doing now, where they own and control everything. You know, for example, Odyssey and others, you know, they were hosting on AWS, for example. Yeah, they got full control over you. You know, like if you're at GoDaddy, for example, they got full control of your website. If you're on social media, I saw this back, you know, when me and Josh got deleted in 2018 with World Alternative Media. We actually got reinstated. You probably have seen that, where our channel got reinstated just a few months ago. So it's been gone for 6 years. Yeah, and then randomly.
That too. Ricky Verandas got his back as well. They're just randomly giving channels back after the, you know, dust has settled with COVID. So you can't talk about it.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Yeah. So it's very interesting. But so with, you know, all of this stuff, we were like, okay, so what are the biggest problems in today's system? It's like centralized control over both your data, and there's no zero privacy whatsoever. Like the NSA and everybody has full control over it. So what can we do to kind of go back to the old revolutionary way of what the internet was supposed to be when in the early days when people were excited about it. They were building. It was supposed to be the people's internet. It sounds very communist, but it's actually not. Like it's a common place for everybody to be equally free. That's what the internet should be, in my view. And of course, it's so far away from that today, with all these major control platforms. So yeah, what we decided to do is like let's create a cloud-based super app. So you have like almost like a app store. We call it the Zap Store. and so we have a super app basically running. This is the wild side. They're probably way over everybody's head, but I'm just going to go very, very basic. And so instead of running on an app in the App Store of Apple, in the App Store of Microsoft, or the Google Play Store, what we decide is like, what can we use in order to have so much more freedom? Oh, we could use web browsers. So these guys are beyond geniuses. So they created a way for me to store everything in the web browser itself. So when I open a little window in my web browser, I go in and get an ID, a digital. This sounds sinister. You get a digital ID. All that it is, there's no facial recognition or what the government wants to do with digital ID. It's just a public key that you get and a private key, like Bitcoin, for example, or other cryptocurrencies. Right. And so that is how you get recognized. But there's no ID of your pictures or your government IDs or any of that garbage. You have a unique ID that shows that you are this entity that you created. Now, that entity on that little browser window starts saving stuff. Like you could put in like music. You could put in like a host your videos. You could have pictures, all kinds of different things that you could create. You could create apps on this platform. But there's no central control, so anybody could participate at putting in apps, and they could charge a full price for their app instead of having Apple or Amazon taking 40 to 60%
of their revenue. Because you guys touch any of it.
No, we're not going to. It's a protocol that we built, and protocols get built like it's like the email protocol. That's a protocol. Like there's email providers on top of it, but the protocol itself is just there. Basically almost like a foundation that sits there and then provides the protocol for everybody to communicate with each other freely. So what
when
we've done is
communicate freely. We're not just talking about text messages back and forth to each other like Telegram, right? We're talking about like video as well.
Yeah. So what have you created with the super app? We created the platform that people could develop apps. So for example, you could develop a YouTube-like app sitting there. And then everybody could, for example, download that app as a creator. So you could create create a YouTube app. So you could have like a little thing on your little site on your little mini computer, and it's like actually literally a small little computer. Let's see if we can see it down here, but it's down here sits the brain of the operation, and that's how I host all my data completely freely on my own. There's no other people hosting it and controlling it. And so what is unique with it is that we host everything on that. There's like a basic homepage. I don't know, like I'd love to show people how it actually looks, but it's basically like a homepage, and that you have like a little search bar at the bottom. In that search bar, you could upload everything that you want. You could upload, like if you're like a creator, you could have your link to all your information there. So people could then go there. Now, I took it a step further. Like we're building it within the internet right now. The biggest goal, bigger goal though, is to actually build the devices that can interjump and completely like separate themselves. So instead of ISPs, everybody is an ISP. Everybody can host a website on their little mini computer, and there's no control by anyone that could, you know, shut down your address or anything like that. And so, that's our grand goal: is to have a little mini computer that can send in, like wireless information to others, or it could be plugged into your next door neighbor or something. And then you could share information with each other, and we'll just basically jump around all over the place, including up to satellites, to then be beamed down again, you know, to Earth in a different place on Earth, and so on. So we're trying to build like a place where we place all these entities at once, kind of. But you have like little mini computers just jumping and talking to each other instead of like going through an, if you have an internet service provider, it goes through a cable to what's called a central unit, which is where your modem is sitting in a tower, like in a rack in a tower. And then it goes out from there into a computer that's run by a central server service provider that then sends the information to the next internet service provider. And then it goes to a central cable into you. Now, what we want to do is like just jump everywhere. Like there's no internet service provider. It's just you and me are just talking to each other locally. Or internationally, with satellite, for example, without the control of any central entity, because the ISPs could just like this shut off your internet connection by just unplugging you at a data rack, and then you're gone. Like you can't communicate with anyone unless you had the possibility. So that is the future. We want to like develop devices that can just interconnect everywhere. And then completely with like circumvent the internet service provider structure. Now, what we built here is to build within the internet, but with the idea of building out the outer net outside of it. So that's kind of like outer net comes from the whole name and idea. And so, yeah, so it's basically like a app store where you could upload things. You could actually send text messages to each other. And so you go to, like right now, it's just run off of one of my domains, which is called hub.bankrun.ca. and so it's running off of that domain. And then I have a little cloud thingy running. So it's providing computing power for my little mini computer. And then I can send texts private with people that I add to that. And soon there's going to be more of these things. And if you had one, on your side, now we have two copies of our conversation. And then you have 10 copies that's because we're developing group chats, like Telegram kind of like group chats, right, that people could use, but it's self-hosted. It's not at Telegram servers or Signal servers or Facebook's WhatsApp servers or any of these providers. They have central data centers that everything is run through. And so everybody could basically host the internet themselves. Like that's the grand vision of this is everybody can host the internet of themselves. And think about how many of us creators out there that are trying to, you know, put out great information to people, but we always get censored on platforms. Well, what if you could just go and jump on, you know, your server that might have like, let's say 100 copies of it around the world because other people wants to have the information and help you. And so suddenly, Charlie doesn't need YouTube. He doesn't need even Odyssey and other of these Rumble or anybody. You are the new provider. Like you might have an app that you bought from somebody that developed it, so you visually pleasing, you know, to search through your videos and stuff. But what you created is self-hosted, but then distributed information on top of it. So you basically, like when you scale this enough into society, how are they going to stop you, you know, from providing information to the population? If the information can just jump, well, they can EMP us, of course. But then everybody is screwed. So there's always a way they could try to stop us. But like basically now they got to create hell on earth to stop us for everyone, including themselves. So I'm very excited about this. This is like not revolutionary, because these type of ideas has been around forever. It's just like somebody needed to build something. And the coolest thing about this project, which is kind of groundbreaking to me, I looked at so many of these different projects that are trying to do things. They're so techy. They're very hard to figure out. Like I'm semi-techy and I have troubles figuring stuff out with a lot of stuff out there. And so when they come up with a little homepage, they're going to click on. And then you click on play on it. And then it opens up. You create like your name. And then a little bio of yourself. And then suddenly I just go in there and, oh, there's a list of people that are like are on the server. And I click on a name that I know and I send a message. And then I message a peer at that person's place. And it's all hosted locally. So it's just kind of groundbreaking. But it's we like our number one thing that we want to do when we develop something is we want to keep it simple. Simple, simple, simple. If you don't do that, you can forget anybody adopting it. And that's why we had so much problems with it, I believe, with some really great projects out there that are trying to, you know, get off the ground. But you just got to keep it simple. You got to have it like so grandma and everybody could use it. Because if you can't, it's nobody's going to want to use it.
No, that's so true. That's the barrier that always gets me. If it's a little too technical, I just go, you know what? I kind of check out. But this one, without internet, no phone numbers, right?
Yeah, zero. Yeah, you don't provide no data whatsoever about yourself. Yeah. All you get is you get a public and a private key to just know that you are Charlie or whatever you want to call yourself. You don't have to call yourself Charlie Robinson, for example. And that entity, that's an entity within the system now. And there's millions of entities, you know, in the future of this that just intermingle and talk to each other. But there's a unique ID that you know that this is you, for example, that are, you know, sharing the information. But, you know, you can't, there's no proof that this is you with your face, with your government issued ID or anything. It's just not there. And it just what we've taken away is some really key features of the control grid of the internet. Is the algorithms will be gone. Your data is not going to be sold. And then you have privacy, which, you know, everything goes through, you know, the NSA or GHQ, wherever you are in the world, there's a spy agency that, you know, gets your feed and the laws of what they could do and look at, you know, is just eroding everywhere. And so we're taking away everything that is built upon, and even like the internet itself, like how many times haven't you been frustrated out there, people, with, you know, suddenly, what was the CrowdStrike thing? Oh yeah, it took down like several billions of computers because one guy did a faulty upload of a new software or firmware, I think it was somewhere, and it took down billions of computers. And, you know, there was just pandemonium. And this is happening more and more with the centralization that they're doing. And this will be with the CBDC as well. You centralize everything and then you collapse. Like that's what happens even to civilizations. They centralize and then they collapse because they forget to feed themselves at some points, like civilizations, because like, oh yeah, we're greater than God now. You know, we don't need to feed ourselves anymore. Like we know how to do this. And one little crisis and then you collapse. Central design can create some amazing things that we've seen throughout history, with pyramids, with all these great civilizations that have lived. But it also is very fragile in the way that, you know, there's a central place that you will work through. Like, look at what happened during COVID when they shut down everything. Like how we were dependent on these central manufacturing grids around the world. Like everything was in China and in Asia, for example. And suddenly it's just full on panic because like, oh crap, you can't, you know, make anything over here and stuff. So yeah, we create like all, like humanity likes to create, like humans are built to be centralized. But I think if we can really unleash the people and take away that one hierarchy power that centralized systems have and then replace it with a decentralized type of system, I think we can really empower humanity. I think the these guys at Google and in OpenAI that are worshipping, you know, their eyes and want to see a future where we're all peasants and basically a few oligarchs are running the show and we're all on UBI. I think with this, you actually contribute computing power to a system that you can choose. For example, you could have a little AI running. We tested AI running from my computer. I was prompting it myself, but it was on my computer. I was actually somewhere else in the city, prompting my computer at home, my little local AI, no communication to the outside. And then I could have my own AI at my house. I could choose to join 10,000 of people maybe like even millions of people, and maybe have a more powerful computing system than one of these data centers that they're building.
You mentioned the sharing computer power.
Yeah,
that reminds me of Bitcoin, the decentralized nature, and then running nodes or mining your own stuff. It feels like, so what is the, how does it work with the computing power? Let's say you've got a computer, you've got outernet hooked up to it, but you're not currently using it right now. You're okay if your computer power of this computer that you're not currently using is being used by other people in the network. How would that work? Would you need to do anything to it? And you said, and there's a way to be compensated for that?
Yeah, so the plan is, like right now it's not, but the plan is to build it.
Conceptually, where it's going.
Yeah, because we're just in the, like what's called the alpha launch, geeks like to call it, which is just early stage. But we got some working concepts already. The texting messaging that we have now proven to work really well. But yeah, so with
the, when you and I were trying it 2 years ago, right? Whatever it was that you sent me, the project that we had, like that was working back then.
Now we created a whole app around it. So like it's actually like a one app that like a platform that basically allows everybody to talk to each other. But it's not a platform that's owned or run by us. It's a platform that can be run by everyone. Whenever you open like or set up a little mini computer thing, you then run like a whole mini app yourself. And then you could choose to go and find access to other things that are available through your network. So you are, let's say you're connected to like 50 people or something, whatever they have, you can then find and be like, oh, this is cool. Like, I want to take a look at this. Maybe it was an app created by a guy that created something for a creator like you. And to set up like a YouTube-like video feed on your, like if you put in this, you will get to Charlie Robinson's privately hosted, maybe on 100 devices kind of thing. But the computing thing, the goal with it, like right now, where it's going to be for probably a few months to half a year, is you can open a cloud in a web little web browser, like just a little thing that you open up in your web browser. You put in a little address. And then you run a cloud, which is providing computing power. Now, that will provide full computing power, whole computer, like a little portion of it that it would give to the network. What is cool about this is you could choose to just be completely offline. You could take whatever we made, the super app, you could download things, you paid for it once. See, this is the cool thing. You pay for an app once or a music once on our system or a video once. Then you download it, you own it. Like that is not the case today. That's also another. So that's another thing. You own everything. Like we're doing the opposite of World Economic Forum. Screw you guys, by the way.
You own everything.
And yeah, like and be very excited about it, right? But yeah, so basically, you run this little cloud thing, and then that'll provide compute. Now you could choose to just run it by yourself offline. Without anybody around, and you could have, let's say, the little apps, you could have some music, some videos, you could have your AI, like if you had a little bit more powerful computer, you could run your AI on the system and then basically talk to it and have it prompt like a Jarvis, for example, if you wanted to. So, but completely offline, no ChatGPT controlling, data or Google, stealing all your data and giving it to everybody else. And so you're running it privately, or you could choose by a little click of a button to run a cloud or in the future, this is how it will work, is that I will provide, let's say, 50% of my GPU. So like my graphic processor in my computer, that's what runs a lot of these AIs. Well, I want to provide 50% of that to network. So let's say you had 8 gigabytes in like some sense. And then there's like 10,000 other people that want to run the same. So now we have a ginormous data center, but it's run by 10,000 people anywhere, around the world, potentially, that are just choose to be like, okay, I'll get compute, like contribute this to whatever. And then, so you can go and purchase them with that crypto that we're creating on the platform. So when you come in with computing power, crypto gets then created. It's not created out of thin air. It gets created with the providing of something of value, which is in the future now. It's going to be, a lot of it's going to be the computing power. So you could choose to give like your graphic processor unit or CPU like your main processor in the computer. You could maybe like even if you wanted to provide some RAM in your computer storage, and you could provide your bandwidth. Let's say like right now, like we're integrating with the internet, but in the future, we're just gonna, you know, if you, let's say you had a really powerful network and can connections to like hundreds of people locally, you created like kind of like a faster way of communicating with everybody. You could choose to have a premium that you could pay for that if you wanted to have access to faster internet, for example, which is totally, I'm an anarcho-capitalist, so I'm totally fine with that. There's nothing wrong where you can control that really, because yeah, like, well, I guess if 100 people are on the network and you're the only one that they could buy from, of course. But that's not the goal of this. It's to have everything distributed between everyone, and then they could share the computing power, and then they will actually get compensated when somebody's using that, because they pay you with these credits, which is the crypto that gets created when there's power. So like people want to buy it, they go and purchase it from you. They could, of course, purchase it with like a Bitcoin or any other thing as well. But they get this, and then they could use it in the ecosystem to buy things, or you could buy processing power in the future, or you could just buy little apps or buy music from creators. But now you're giving the creators in the world full autonomy over and ownership over everything. Well, on today's platforms, they own everything. Like the platforms, you have very little rights as, you know, musicians, or if you create movies or TV program, whatever you want to create, you have very little to say. And there's a hierarchy of people stealing from you. and, you know, you created TV programs, so you know, like, that there's people that get royalties and so on, and for everything. Of course, you could create this structure within this, but what we're trying to do is provide a platform for people so they could take back more ownership and have more ownership over their own lives without, you know, the algorithms, without the loss of privacy, and the freedom to just communicate individually online, which is, it's not a human right. Nothing is a human right, but it's pretty damn near being, everybody should be allowed to equally communicate with each other. And we're not, like today, that's for sure.
So this would run off of like a proof of work, in a sense, right?
No.
You bring your computer power to the table, right? I'm talking about like if you 50% of your stuff, and you say, well,
if you wanted to, yeah.
Yeah, if you wanted to, and you were loaning out your service, and in exchange for that, you were being compensated by the network for creating.
Yeah, because they want to purchase your computing power to use it for themselves, kind of thing.
So that's why I say proof of work. In a sense,
you have to do something.
Your computer has to do something in order to justify the creation of the currency. You don't get it just because some guy typed it in a computer and created like a billion new coins, right? You got to earn.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, because that's most of them today is that very thing. And so you provide something of value to the network of people, and then you get something back. And that's then like our little protocol, our communication network in the background is just talking to each other around the world. That's like kind of the email. Like we're the email and basically we're the AWS of the world, but we are not in control of nothing. Like all we provide is for everybody to have a protocol to communicate freely on the internet. If you have an email somewhere, you have a protocol that's either an IMAP or an SMTP or a POP server, they're called. And those are protocols that are used to communicate over the internet. And that's what we built, is an actual protocol to allow people to set up these clouds and then talk to each other. And then in the background, all these computers are talking to each other through this protocol, so they understand each other. And then they provide things like apps, they provide, you know, self-hosting and all kinds of things that you could ever think of and create in a decentralized network where you're free to create. Like, you're not creating to be a part of a platform. Like, think about if you had web developers not creating an app to be bought up by Google and then be squashed because Google doesn't want competition, but they can buy you, right? Well, now you suddenly have people that have so much more power, like, you know, team of, let's say, 10 guys could have a small business in computing instead of having to sell to Google. They're part of the network now, and then they benefit from selling their services or their apps to people that want them. And then there's no like Play Store or anything that could take most of it, you know, in the revenue, and making it a lot harder, because all these platforms like software as a service and all these stuff, they're just like platforms that give people access to things, but they can also take access away from people.
Of course, that's the problem.
Yeah,
right. Is that they?
Yeah, huge problem.
We exist at the behest of them. Like if they turn the switch off, we're
yeah.
off.
Amazon could kill books. Like you sell your books, I would assume somewhat on Amazon as well. I do. Well, they could just take our books, right? Never gone. And so, yeah, now I could sell my book like a PDF format. Like I could have a little payment thing that you have to do in order to get it. And then you could download it on the internet. That's like kind of what we're looking at in the future. Yeah. So we're taking away these central, like there's only a few central, you know, centers of control, but we're making it like we're giving it back to people to see what people could do with it and have some fun with it. Then go back to kind of the early days of the internet with the Burwicks and others were fooling around and creating businesses on it and amazing things. When McAfee, you know, did insane stuff on the internet and so on. That's kind of what we're trying to go back in that spirit of freedom and love for humanity, basically, that we're trying to... We just want to give people back their lives again, because we're getting that stolen every single day. There's like chiseling on our tiny little amount of freedoms that we have left to try to make us into the peasants in a feudalist kind of communist utopia that they want. Instead, we want to we're not wanting to create a utopia. We just want to create a place where people could dream and love and be happy again, and not in control of these psychopathic algorithms, you know, that drag you down some very bad places.
How much longer do you think until this is ready to roll out? I mean,
I think in a few weeks, the people could actually start joining the texting app. What we want now is the initial launch. We just launched what's called our community. So you could go, if you're a programmer, if you're a guy that know a little bit more techie stuff, we want people to be able to come in and join and then start developing and playing with it and then create their little mini computers for people to be able to use, because that's how you start to build a network. Because now it's a little bit too geeky for the everyday person to just come in and be like, oh, I want to create a computer. But then if you wanted one, we could build one for you right now and then give it to you. But like that's where we're at. So what we're building now is just that community where people could build these little devices, and then maybe they want to run them all by themselves and in their own house or something. Or maybe they want to share it with others and have everybody else being able to allowed to use it. And so if you, for example, have one and I have one, we could talk to each other. So the initial one now is for a few weeks where we launched it out and we want people to join the community. It's outer. So it's outerr.net/community. So if you go there, you can put in your information, like whatever phone or email you want, or you could just go to our YouTube or Discord that we have on there. And then you could see what we're up against. We're just starting like to kind of like really launch now and put out the information. I'm creating videos as a non-geek trying to explain this to people. So that's fun.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
with two R's for everybody.
Yeah. We're pirates.
Outer.net. Is that?
Yeah. Yeah, that's correct. And so, but anyways, like what we're trying to, so that's like the next few weeks, but we want to actually like open probably the next 3-4 weeks, like in a month, we probably have so people could start using, you could, for example, you could use my server right now. You could have people join it and then you guys could text each other. I know I can see the people there, but I can't come in and check anything. Like everything, like the web developers show me what's happening behind the scenes. And it's all like encrypted numbers that I have no clue what's going on. Wow. In the background when there's messages like
they
being sent.
They can't see anything either, right? They don't.
No, yeah. So, like anybody that's on these can not see anything. So you could just go to, for example, my if some people wants to try this out for fun, they could go to hub.bank, so https colon backslash backslash hub.bankrun.ca slash home. And then they put in that, and then they get prompted to just click on a play button. And then you get, you come in, you create your name or whatever you want to call yourself, and a little thing about you if you want that. You don't have to. And then you just join, you go into the page, and then you click on refreshing it, the page. And then as you refresh the page, you then get back into the system, click on play again, and then now you see your name on there. But now we could choose, for example, like you'll see my name, like John Brave or John Snyzen. Like you could actually then text me, for example. And then we have a text messaging system that is just you and me talking to each other privately without the internet, like the cellular providers can't watch us, or the ISPs or any entities out there. So it's super cool. And we're very close to, like, finally, we're very close to getting this out. And we're actually building a replacement, excuse me, for the group chats because that's very popular. You know, we have our Telegram, like the Union of the Unwanted Telegram, for example. That could be then put on a self-hosted device. But let's say all of us had it. So now we had 50 plus copies of our chats and
So
we're
you
all
tried to
hosting
stop
ourselves.
me from talking about it, and let's just say somebody tried to stop me, but there'd still be 49 copies elsewhere, and everybody else's, so they could.
Yeah, exactly. So super exciting stuff, and we're sort of finally getting very close to like having public finally using it because that's so exciting. Like you have no idea how excited. Like I'm not a very like excited. Like I don't get riled up very much, you know. But I'm very excited about this. This is so cool, and especially when you understand the ramifications of what we're doing with what we want to create. I think hopefully we could create something that could make an impact on. That's what I live for, anyways, to make an impact on making people a little bit freer than they were before I go away from this planet, anyways. And hopefully I could give people some of that.
It's a great idea, man. And the perfect time for it. It's an idea, a great idea at the right time. So it's a nice
Yeah, now the
combination.
censorship bills that are coming out, like, hey, we were like, oh, shoot, like now it's really the right time what we're doing. So it's very exciting. It's very exciting. And yeah, so like they said, like, yeah, don't do, like the, what was it, the minister in the UK came out. It's like, don't use VPNs. I was like, you think that now everybody's going to use VPNs, dummy? But it's like that, right? Like, so they create like these authoritarian, they're going to arrest people from talking. Well, if what if you can't see what I'm talking to my friends about on our self-hosted networks? Like, screw you. Like, you could throw these things in. We were playing with the idea of dropping these hubs in, send drones in over North Korea or into Russia or into the US, like certain places, and then be like just instructions on how to set these up and talk to each other. And then, uh-oh, the authoritarian regimes are in trouble now.
Yeah, once this information gets out, then it's all over
Yeah.
for them. Yeah, let's wrap up with this.
Yeah.
Still loving Bitcoin? Because when you and I were hanging out the first time, it was around, $4,000. I mean, I know we've got some privacy issues surrounding it,
Yeah.
but
I still hold Bitcoin. I didn't like, yeah, I understand a lot of the privacy issues. They track everyone on it now, right? And of course, the big banks, the scum banksters, have now trying to implement their ETFs. So instead of the Bitcoin price, you look at an ETF. You know, like, oh, what happened? Oh, gold and silver. Same concept. As soon as I heard they were going to launch ETFs, the Bitcoin community is like, yeah. It's like,
I was like, I don't know.
yeah. We've seen this before with gold and silver and other things. So, yeah, sure, Bitcoin. I like Bitcoin. I hold it still. I wish I held my 8 bitcoins that I used to have back in the day. That would have been fun now, but no, not much anymore.
Everyone's got those stories. When
Oh,
nobody knew
yeah.
what they were sitting on.
Yeah. No, I lost several. I had like scammers steal 8 bitcoins from me back in the day. So what is $25?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, lots of funny stories around that. But yeah, no, I still like Bitcoin. I don't mind. I see it still as a. I predicted in 2014. I wrote an article saying that it would probably become a world reserve currency.
Really?
Yeah, and it, like, look at now. Like, you have treasuries. You have a whole bunch of others trying to, like, you know, accumulate it and hold it. So, yeah, I'm sure. Like, but again, like, I would prefer to try to create things that give people value. Like, what is Bitcoin really doing right now other than you storing it? Yeah, I guess you could protect your purchasing power from these evil fiat currencies for a bit. You're still in that grid where everybody could watch everything that you do. So if you want privacy, don't buy Bitcoin. No. There's, you know, like the Moneros. There's a few others out there that you can use, of course, with that. But yeah, no, I still like any decentralized technology I love. It's the idea of it that can empower individual human beings like us. So I'm all for like these type of technologies. Don't get me wrong, but yeah, Bitcoin, sure, yeah, why not? Yeah.
Oh man, what's the best place for people to find you? Where's the best place for people to buy your books, even if they do want to go to Amazon?
Well, they can come directly to me on my website, like you have, as well. Like, they could come to theeconomictruth.org, and then I have my books for sale in my little shop that I have there. So you could actually, like, you could buy it, or you could buy, oh, you want John's autograph, you could get that too on there. Write a little message to people. So it's always fun. But yeah, so I got theeconomictruth.org. You'll find everything that I do, including the Outernet project and everything else that I'm involved in. Like, I haven't done podcasts in quite a while now because I've been so bogged down focusing on this, because I see the potential of what it could. Yeah, it might give me enough that I could just have a good time and really focus on freedom and my passion more than, you know, like just having a full-time job and then working all the time. So if I could get to a point where I could have my 80 hours every week focused on this instead, sure. Yeah. I would love to. So that's kind of what I'm doing now. I'm really working hard for this, not just for my own enrichment, but for many of the things that we discussed in the podcast, is to help us, because like, they sure want to like divide us and take all our rights away. They hate our guts. And so, yeah, so we got to hate their guts back by doing the complete opposite. That's when the government tells you what to do, guys, just do the complete opposite.
Just start your own company doing decentralized communication. Uh-huh. That's John Snyson, everybody. Go support him. Go buy his books. Check out theeconomictruth.org, his website. If you want to connect with me, macroaggressions.io is the place to go. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you again soon.